This is the Afternoon Brief on High FM with Michael McKenna.
Cape Town is often celebrated as one of the world's most beautiful cities, but for many people who work there, living there remains out of reach. Now, a recent Constitutional Court judgment has reignited the debate around affordable housing, finding that the Western Cape government and the city of Cape Town has failed to meet their constitutional obligations to address apartheid-era spatial inequality through well-located affordable housing. Now, our next guest argues that the ruling exposes a gap between promises and delivery and raises important questions about who gets to live close to jobs, public transport, and economic opportunities. Joining us now, we welcome Brett Herron. Brett is the Secretary General of the Good Party, also member of the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, and the Unite for Change joint mayoral candidate for Cape Town. Brett, good afternoon to you, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Michael.
Brett, for listeners who haven't followed the case closely, let's start there. So what did the Constitutional Court actually rule, and why do you believe it's such a significant moment for Cape Town?
There were, I think, are important. So the first one...
Hello, Brett. Oh, dear, we've lost Brett. We're going to try and get Brett back on the line. If you've just joined us, welcome to the Afternoon Brief. We're looking, our focus is on Cape Town, where a recent Constitutional Court judgment has reignited the debate around affordable housing, finding that the Western Cape government and the city of Cape Town has failed to meet their constitutional obligations to address apartheid-era spatial inequality through well-located affordable housing. I had Brett Herron on the line. We seem to be having some telephonic signal issues. Brett is the Secretary General of the Good Party, also member of the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, and the Unite for Change joint mayoral candidate for Cape Town. Whilst we try and get Brett on the line, to our Cape Town listeners, if you've got any questions on this issue or anything to contribute to the debate, please WhatsApp us on 061 895 1019. Craig tells me Brett is back on the line. Brett, are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry, Brett, about that.
No, not at all. Okay, so let's just recap for all of us now who haven't really followed the case closely. So what did the Constitutional Court actually rule, and why do you believe it's such a significant moment for Cape Town?
So I think in general terms, the Constitutional Court progressed housing rights substantially by finding that, there is an obligation on the state, which includes national, provincial, and local government, to address the apartheid spatial legacy, so the legacy of the Group Areas Act, mm-hmm. and the fact that people of color were kept away from economic opportunities, social amenities, and so the segregated city, the obligation on our government, all three spheres, there is a constitutional obligation to address the segregated city. So that's a general finding. In particular, when governments build housing and provide housing opportunity, they must take location into account.
Okay.
Which is a really significant progression since the Grootboom judgment of 2000, which found that there's an obligation on the state to progressively realize the right to housing. Now the court has added that in that work in progressing the right to housing, the state must take into account where that housing is located. Mm-hmm. So it made location important. I think another important finding was that public land cannot be regarded as a commodity to be sold. And if a state entity or a sphere of government, provincial, national, to sell land, that sale would be tested against the reasonableness of selling off the land in the context of a extreme housing shortage and also the need to address the apartheid spatial plan. So really a profound judgment which moved the rights of housing substantially by infusing every decision with geographical location considerations.
Indeed. Brett, at this point in time, which particular areas within the city of Cape Town are most affected in this regard?
Well, this particular case was about Tafelberg's site, which is in Sea Point.
Mm-hmm.
But the court's judgment was that there's an obligation on the City of Cape Town and the Western Cape Provincial Government to provide affordable housing, so access to affordable housing in the city centre and surrounds. And it said where there was any doubt as to whether Seapoint it was included in the surrounds part, the court found it is. So we're talking specifically about the city centre and the surrounding neighbourhoods like Woodstock, Salt River Observatory, right, and the Atlantic Seaport, Seapoint and Greenpoint.
When we look at your arguments, your argument debates that the judgment also exposed years of empty affordable housing promises. So why do you believe then successive commitments haven't translated into meaningful action until now?
Well, I mean, the Constitutional Court heard this the argument in this case at the beginning of the year, at the end of last year, so 2025. The litigation started in 2017, and in the court papers tabled by the city or provided by the city, the city makes a number of promises based on plans that were in place in 2017 and 2018. The city manager deposed his affidavit as to the plans to address the apartheid spatial plan in July 2018.
Mm-hmm.
In those court papers, he refers to projects that I was involved in when I was in the City of Cape Town, which was the identification of land in those areas that the Constitutional Court said the city must provide housing in, Woodstock, Salt River, the inner city. Those parcels of land were identified in 2017. The court papers are dated 2018. The Democratic Alliance Council cancelled all of those projects in August 2019. So actually went to court arguing that these projects are in the pipeline, having already cancelled them in August 2019, and then reinstated them in the last year or two. So when the court ordered the City of Cape Town to file under oath a report as to what it has achieved since the litigation started, the City of Cape Town's going to be pointing to the same project that are in the court papers, and where the city manager is basically saying these projects will be delivered within the next few years. So nothing has happened in the last 8 years since the litigation started.
Yeah, Brett, so we can also look at the cost of the spatial inequality. I mean, many people are still spending hours commuting into Cape Town every day. I mean, what is the impact here, not just on families, but on the city's economy and quality of life for that matter?
I think there's a massive, transport and access to the city is an important part of economic development, both public transport and freight transport. But in the City of Cape Town, as you rightfully say, people are spending hours commuting. If you go to a public transport hub on the Cape Flats or in an African township at 5 a.m. in the morning, you'll see people who have been queuing up the early hours of the morning to make sure they can get onto a taxi. So there's this very, very early start for people who are located on the outskirts of the city. And then there was a study that was done when I was still in the city that and it's repeated by Stats SA's annual public transport survey, that in the City of Cape Town, on average, low-income households are paying about 43% of household income on the direct cost of transport, so purchasing the ticket. It's a massive chunk out of household income. 43% on average is the cost of transport. So there's a cost to the economy because that is disposable income that cannot be spent elsewhere.
Okay, so we find ourselves now in a municipal election year. Now, if elected to lead Cape Town, so what specific steps would your coalition and yourself, for that matter, take to accelerate affordable housing near jobs and transport hubs?
So I think there's a number of steps. First of all, the current attitude of the government, the city government, is that they can only spend or that can only build housing or provide housing within the framework of the national grant, a national treasury grant that they get.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that they they argue that they're limited by the extent to which they get funding from National Treasury, which is not a good argument to make, because the city of Cape Town has got sound financials, it has got excellent professional staff in the administration, and it has a really good credit rating. So it is the opportunity to change the model, and even to in a way to go back to the apartheid city model. Mm-hmm. The apartheid cities used to build affordable housing, but for white South Africa, using long-term borrowings. So they viewed housing as infrastructure, borrowed using long-term access to long-term borrowings, and then serviced that long-term borrowings from rental. So we must use public land in well-located areas and use the financing model that was used by the apartheid city governments to build city-owned rental accommodation where the tenants are servicing the debt through their rent contribution. So that's one way of doing it. But the model of just sitting back and saying we can only do what national government funds is never going to address the housing crisis in Cape Town. We have to really leverage well-located public land to finance the building of affordable housing that the city will own,
mm-hmm.
and also to partner with social housing companies to deliver housing within the national program. But the problem with the social housing national program is that it is underfunded. Currently, there are 8 projects that have been in the social housing pipeline for years, for which there's no funding allocated, and an additional 10 projects that are currently identified as going to be added to this pipeline. So this pipeline of social housing it's got a bottleneck of underfunding, and there are opportunities for the city to raise its own finance and to build decent, affordable housing that is rental and owned by the city, it must be well managed and well maintained,
sure.
and the rent can be stabilized, and we can service the financing cost.
Brett, as we wrap up, I wish we just had a few more minutes just to, you know, analyze and look at other few issues. But for someone listening today who feels they've been priced out of living near where they work, what would you like them to know about the future of affordable housing in Cape Town? What would you like to put out there?
The future of affordable housing is possible to achieve at a much larger scale and at a much faster pace. If government, if our city government stops being a bystander and starts being an active player in delivering that affordable housing. And the affordable housing crisis is affecting low-income families, middle-income families, to the extent that people are unable to access and move on and from their family homes and access affordable housing. And if we stay with the current model, we will exacerbate this crisis, and the middle-income families will increasingly be unable to also afford housing in Cape Town.
Brett, we're going to have to leave it there. We've just about run out of time, but thank you so much for joining us today on the Afternoon Brief. Brett Herron, Secretary General of the Good Party, also member of the Western Cape Provincial Parliament and the Unite for Change joint mayoral candidate for Cape Town. Affordable housing, that is what we touched onto regarding Cape Town. Unfortunately, we ran out of time. I wanted to ask him, you know, does this constitutional court judgment have implications beyond Cape Town? But okay, perhaps that's for another discussion. But for now, affordable housing, it's about far more than bricks and mortar. We're talking about dignity, opportunity, creating cities where people can live closer to where they work, study and build their lives. And it certainly was a conversation that's likely to remain front and center as we head towards the local government elections. Once again, Brett, we certainly appreciate your time. I mean, I've appealed to Capetonian listeners, but perhaps everyone else can come on board the conversation. Should affordable housing be prioritized in well-located urban areas, even if it changes the character of existing neighborhoods, even if it changes the value of neighborhoods? The value of properties, there's that concern with residents. Would you support high density affordable housing developments close to where you live? Or is affordable housing primarily a housing issue? Or is it also an economic growth and social justice issue? Number of factors factoring in there into the conversation.